Still, no deal in hand on raising the debt ceiling. President Biden will spend the holiday weekend at Camp David, and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy will stay in Washington as their negotiators try to get everyone closer to yes before the US can no longer pay its bills starting next week.
Our Friday Politics Roundtable joins us to talk about that and about the murder of George Floyd and whether it's changed our politics 3 years on. Ron Elving is NPR Senior Washington Editor and Correspondent. Ron, welcome back.
Good to be with you both.
And Jesse Holland is columnist at MSNBC and guest host on C-SPAN. Jesse, happy Friday.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the debt ceiling. It is widely reported that the key areas still to negotiate are, one, how much to cut federal spending, and two, what additional work requirements to require for Americans to get safety net benefits. Jesse, on the Republican side, what does Speaker McCarthy need to sell to members on his side of the aisle to get enough GOP votes?
And that's the big question McCarthy has to answer. Right now, the Freedom Caucus and the MAGA Republicans in Congress are saying to him that no deal. Either the White House capitulates to their demands, or they're going to vote against whatever deal he comes out with. Now, the question is, will McCarthy have enough control of his caucus that he can get enough votes and maybe a couple of Democrats that will vote with him to get something out of the House? He's dealing with hardliners in his own caucus who don't want to negotiate with the White House at all. They would rather see the debt limit fall and the country go into default. They don't plan right now to come off of their hardline position. And it's going to be up to McCarthy to get enough Republicans that he can pass this with maybe a couple of Democrats.
Okay. I mean, that is some line in the sand. Which kind of means President Biden and Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries need to bring on Democrats. Ron, how are they messaging to them?
They're messaging to the Democrats that it is either a compromise of the kind that the Democrats have a hand in fashioning, or something that is going to be horrendous, which would be a default. And I think Jesse's exactly right that these House Republicans that are threatening to vote against any deal are clearly never going to come aboard. And so either you find some Democratic votes or you get a default. So Biden has a rather large cudgel here to say, we don't want default. You're going to have to be at least somewhat reasonable. We're going to have to get some kind of a deal. And he's saying that to both parties, including the people in his own party who want to hold out against certain elements of this, any of the elements of this that are being discussed, which are flat out unacceptable to many Democrats.
And Ron, briefly, you've covered so many of these disputes. Is there any feeling in Washington where this is going to go? Because up in New York, the financial markets don't seem particularly perturbed right now.
They're buying the New York Times front page this morning and some of the other reporting that overnight was very encouraging, among other things, an agreement to make this a two-year extension of the debt ceiling. So we don't have to do this every year. And so we don't have to do it every several months, which is another prospect, another possibility for getting a deal is to kick the can for a period of weeks or months. Mm. And I don't think that's entirely off the table yet either until we see the votes. But I think the markets clearly, I mean, the Dow Jones is up 300 points. That's having the best day it's had since the crisis seeped into the consciousness of the nation in recent days that there was this problem. So the market is buying an optimistic view for the moment. I wouldn't be surprised to see, as the day goes on, some chill come over that, some lack of confidence come over that, because after all, we're going into a three-day weekend in which it's going to be a little difficult for everyone to get on the same page. Maybe they need that 3 days. Maybe the backdoor stuff is going to be more successful over the long weekend, and the backdoor stuff is really what's gotten us to where we are today.
And maybe we need the 3 days. I want to switch it a little bit. This week has been a huge week for very tragic anniversaries. We had the Uvalde anniversary. We also had yesterday, 3 years ago, George Floyd was murdered by a Minneapolis police officer who kneeled on his neck for more than 9 minutes. His family vowed his death would change the world, yet Congress has been unable to pass national police reform. Jesse, you know, there has been a conversation on race. It seems to have dissipated somewhat. How do you see it?
Not only has it dissipated, but in some places it seems like we're going in the wrong direction. We see states like Florida pulling away from education and pulling away from talking about African-American events and banning books and poems. We see pushback on the supposed new definition of the word woke. So in some issues and some areas, we've devolved since George Floyd. But one of the things that we can see in the country is that there is an actual conversation going on around police reform. There may not be any results, not yet, but the fact that we're even still talking about it puts us way ahead of where we were before George Floyd's death. Now, there has not been a bill that's come through that will allow these major reforms nationally, but many places locally, like Minneapolis, have already made those reforms. So there has been some progress, just not nationally, but at least the conversations are still going on around the country, which puts us way ahead of where we were a few years back.
And Ron, is there much track record policy-wise for big change coming from the bottom up from state and local governments?
Yes, in a sense, that's the best kind of change. It's the change that's most permanent when it is close to home. And I would recommend to all of our listeners the Minnesota Public Radio a story by John Collins, just published yesterday, how Minneapolis has changed 3 years after the murder of George Floyd, and going over a lot of that material that Jesse just referred to. That is heartening. It's certainly not an all good news story, but it is heartening to see some incremental change being made. And as one person says in the story, incremental change is better than no change. And even if it is on the local level, and even if it is only incremental, that would be on the positive side. But as Jesse said, a lot of what we've seen in the last 3 years is discouraging, because we have seen the term woke misunderstood and misused and turned into a weapon. We have seen people talk about defunding the police as though that were somehow some sort of official policy of the Democratic Party. And we've just seen a lot of the debate hijacked from where it was at the time that there was a national conviction that we needed to look at policing in the wake of George Floyd's death.
Let's talk briefly about the Republicans running for president. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis threw his hat into the ring. There was a bit of a tech meltdown on Twitter, but he is raising a fair bit of money now. Jesse, how is DeSantis positioning himself in the GOP field?
Well, right now he's positioning himself as the anti-Trump who is actually following the same policies as Trump. So he's positioning himself as the candidate who can do the same things that Donald Trump wanted to do, but doesn't carry the same baggage. He's actually going around the country touting what he's done in Florida as an example of what he can do for the entire United States, which of course, given what we already talked about, the using of the word woke as a weapon, his attacks on Disney as being too woke, that's the policies that he believes that conservatives want. They want someone like him who is willing to take on these culture war issues, but he's not Donald Trump. And I think that's what his biggest selling point right now, that he does not carry the baggage. He's not going to be in court like former President Trump. He's positioning himself as the person who's ready in case Donald Trump is not the candidate.
And he raised $8.2 million in his first day. We must say that. So there is support for Ron DeSantis. Are there any chances, though, and this is, you know, something else that the Republicans have been very outspoken on, is immigration. And we just heard of a new bill this week. Florida Republican Maria Elvira Salazar has a bill she's co-sponsoring with Texas Democrat Veronica Escobar. It would increase border security. It would also overhaul the asylum system and create a pathway to citizenship for those already in the U.S. And Representative Salazar told us who would qualify.
Well, I would say the overwhelming majority of people who are undocumented, 10 million, 12 million, we don't really know, but if they have been here for more than 5 years, have not committed a crime, and that's the overwhelming majority of the undocumented.
Okay, so I just would love to know, Ron, is this politically viable right now in our last few seconds?
It is not going to pass in this Congress. Steve Scalise, who is the number two Republican leader in the House, has said it can't go until they have a border security bill they're happy with. That has to be first. But in the long run, this is the shape of the future. This is the compromise. This is the framework that could work if you could get some goodwill from both parties.
Which we will keep watching. It's Ron Elving of NPR, Jesse Holland of MSNBC. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.